being a Richard Stallman fan, so don't bear with me on that point. But yeah, we'll be talking about mostly about these two little guys, the Nintendo DS and the GB2X. They both run Linux, and I'm going to be talking about the ways in which they're similar and the ways in which they're different, a bit of a compare and contrast kind of thing. Wow, that's slow. The Nintendo DS is a system from like a huge multi-billion-dollar corporation. They're the only game company that make their systems out of profit. Everyone else uses the software sales to offset the hardware losses. So they make pretty sweet little machines, and their stuff's very more open than their competitors, as I'll talk about a bit later. But they are basically proprietary systems. The GP2X is made by a small Korean company, independent company called Game Park Holdings, and they split off from a larger company called Game Park because all of the engineers disagreed with the management except one, and so all these engineers they've made their own product, which is the next in the generation from the original company who made the GP32, which was fairly popular as well. But these engineers, obviously tech heads, because they said, hey, why don't we stick Linux on it? So it actually ships with Linux on it, which is kind of cool. And it's a lot more open system than the Nintendo DS's. 50%.
Woo!
Okay. So has anyone got either of these systems? Yeah, he's got a DS. He's got the GP2X. Cool. One person. two. The form factor is kind of interesting because you can tell that the DS have a lot of money because it looks exactly like an iPod. But this one's actually remarkably sleek looking. I think because they're such a small company, they have quite a quick turnaround time for changing hardware. So maybe went through a few iterations in the design team, and it's quite nice. It's good to hold. The joystick has this unique little tilted thing like this. So I won't be talking today about a couple of systems, the PlayStation Portable or the Game Boy Advance. The reason I won't be talking about the PlayStation Portable is because it's hell to get homebrew running on it. You have to do all these nasty hacks. Sony is a weird company because I think it's because they're so big. They have so many arms. One arm's trying to do something and the other arm's saying, hey, no, we can't do that that way. You know, because they've got they've got companies who manage content producers, like record company branches and stuff. And they've at the same time got people who are making hardware, which makes it very easy to copy software and copy content between different devices. So, you've got Ken Kutaragi at the top of Sony, who's kind of seems to always be battling against it. Like, you've got the PS3 and the PS2 with Linux kits for them, but at the same time, on the other side of the company, you've got them encouraging DRM and releasing CDs with rootkits on them, crazy stuff like that. So it's a weird kind of shake-up. And you'll notice that he's no longer the president of Sony Computer Entertainment. He after the PS3 got released, he sort of got promoted sideways into a different position. And before that, he's actually been demoted, and I've got a quote here about that demotion. Many attributed the demotion to his speech at the Foreign Correspondents Club in Tokyo, wherein he criticised Sony's policy of using proprietary technologies, and implicitly criticised the company's use of DRM technologies in reference to Sony's failure to offer a compelling strategy to answer to the rise of Apple Computer's iPod. So, yeah, that basically sums it up. so the kinds of hacks that you have to do to get anything running on the PSP are stuff like making weird bastardized images that aren't really images, and there's a variety of different weird things you have to do, but they're all ugly hacks.
Speaking of.
yeah, what can you do?
then oh, that top, I guess. Support that company, perhaps?
Sorry?
Not support that company?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Totally. Can I just load up my talk? Do I have to use it for the recording? Is that right?
No.
Or can I just talk? Can you go ahead
and
talk?
Yeah.
Is it possible to turn the lights off at the front, but we're giving a lot of glare on the projector.
The back. All right. So I've already discussed the differences, like what they are. Yeah, that basically sums it up. Big company versus small company, proprietary versus open. And the PSP, digital rights management evilness, inelegant hacks required. So this there's obviously some controversy over the GPL version 3. Yeah, go on. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. I'll talk about that later, yep. yeah, so maybe it's... One of the considerations of the GPL version 3 is this whole, like, digitally signed binaries thing, where companies like Sony don't allow you to run stuff on their hardware unless it's been signed by their key. So I have a really bad feeling that this is going to happen a lot more by people releasing hardware, and there might be a time when... Even your home computer gets released with this kind of technology in it, and that scares me a little bit. So I'm not saying the GPL version 3 is the answer, but there has been like a really big, you know, movement against it by the kernel hackers, and I guess that's their choice and they have their reasons, but something to think about anyway. I don't think the debate should just end. So the Game Boy Advance is the other system I won't be talking about. It's got a 2.0 kernel microcontroller Linux, and it's got a SAS shell, and it's basically useless. all you can do is boot up into it. You can't really do anything, but it's cool that someone ported it. That's basically what's amazing about it, is someone actually ran Linux on it. All right, so now I'm going to give a hardware rundown of both systems. Starting with the Nintendo DS. It's got two ARM CPUs, a 67 MHz one and a 33 MHz one. One's an ARM 9 and one's an ARM 7. The ARM 7 is the same processor that runs in the iPod and the Lego Mindstorms, so it's a pretty common chip. They both support the ARM Thumb 32 16-bit instruction sets. So you can do different interesting things by choosing which kind of code you use. The memory on the Nintendo DS, this system here, is 4 megabytes. It's got 4 megabytes of RAM, which is not really very much. And when you're running Linux on it, and you're trying to run something like Lynx, the browser, you'll find that even a lot of the console mode apps will bomb out before reaching 4 megabytes. So it's kind of restricted. So the NDS ROM cards hold up to 128 megs. They're these things in the back. They look like that. They're sort of vaguely similar to a compact flash or a SD card, but you can't write to them. They're ROMs, basically. Same thing they've always done, releasing cartridges for their system. It's got built-in 802.11, which is probably the coolest thing about it. That's why I bought it. When I found that out, I was like, yes, a big company did something right. The interface is a D-pad, one of these guys like on the original Nintendo systems, and 4 buttons on the right-hand side and the start and select button. So those in DS Linux, people, they've mapped those to different keys, which is kind of useful because the touchpad's kind of annoying to use. So there's a touch screen. There's two screens, top screen and a bottom screen. in a DS Linux, they use the bottom screen for running a keyboard emulation, and you can flick between keyboard and mouse modes, so there's a mouse mode, and the top screen just shows you the shell or whatever. It's got a Nintendo's 2D graphics chip inside it, which is pretty cool. It's exactly the same as the old GBA 2D graphics chip, so it can do stuff like manage sprites and tiled backgrounds, can do multiple layers of tiled backgrounds. It's basically great for things like games. And but none of that is really supported by DS Linux directly, so once you boot into Linux, unless you write your own kernel module to do weird stuff with tiled modes, it's not going to happen. And it's pretty early days in terms of that stuff. It also has a 3D chip built in, which is pretty cool. It can do transformer lighting, textures, alpha blending, aliasing, cell shading, Z buffering, everything you'd expect from a 3D chip. It does have some limitations. I think there's 12,000 polygons on the screen at the same time maximum that you can do, or something like that. And it's not supported by DS Linux yet. So hopefully, eventually, someone will write a OpenGL wrapper or whatever, port the MESA headers and fit that code on there, because that would be pretty cool to see 3D on a little handheld device like that. The battery holds about 10 hours on a 4-hour charge. So with the storage, you've got different options, right? Because it's still got the... Although it's got this proprietary Nintendo thing in the back, in the front, it still has the old cartridge. So... In the Nintendo cartridge section, you can plug in one of these guys, and then into one of these guys, you can plug in one of these guys, tiny little mini SD card. It used to be, before they had mini SD cards, you used to have these big clunky ones that stuck right out of the front of here, and you could plug a compact flash or a normal SD card into it. And then before that, you had these ROMs, which you burned directly to by plugging them into a thing that plugged into your USB drive. And before that, you had a thing where you had to plug it into your parallel port. And I don't know what there was before that, maybe rocks and paper and stone or something. But so it's pretty easy now to get your code onto it when you've developed. And that basically acts like a hard drive. So when you boot into DS Linux, you can edit text files and stuff. You can save stuff on there. So now I'll do a hardware rundown of the GP2X. That's this guy here. The first thing you notice really is that it has a larger screen. Its screen, I find it nicer than the DS screen. I mean, it's not just the size. Something about it seems nicer, clearer or something. But it does obviously doesn't have two screens, and the screen's not touch sensitive. It's got an EXT port, which I'll talk about a bit in a minute. And out of this, you can plug a TV out into that, so you can run it directly into your TV, which is great for parties. You know, you can just like load up Sonic, your legally owned copy of Sonic the Hedgehog on there. And it's got a joypad, which I mentioned before, has this cool little, it's sort of an inverted joypad, so it goes like that on the top, so you put your thumb on it, and it just sits in there really well. It's basically got the same buttons as the DS. Power, it runs off two AA batteries, and it does that quite well. If you try and play, you know, full-screen DivX or something, it'll run out of batteries in a couple of minutes. But if you use lithium batteries, we were watching some stuff on the plane over here, it lasts for quite a long time, or doing anything else really CPU intensive. It's also got two ARM processors, except as opposed to the DS where the ARM processors are separate, it's got them both on one die. It's called the Magic Eyes chip. It's a one chip solution. So it's got like video decoding stuff and all kinds of extra stuff for talking to USB and all that kind of stuff on one chip. So the two CPUs are a 200 megahertz ARM9 and a 200 megahertz ARM9. One of them acts like a host, so when you run Linux, Linux runs on one of the CPUs, and you can actually use the other CPU for doing other stuff. But I'll talk about that a bit more in a second. It's got 64 megs RAM, which is considerably more than the DS, and 64 megabytes NAND flash, which is where the Linux systems are all stored in the device, and you can upgrade the firmware from new kernels released by the GP2X people when they periodically release them. It's the way you get stuff onto it is it's got a compact flash thing in the front here, so you can just copy stuff onto it over USB or whatever. Speaking of USB, it has... No, not speaking of USB. Well, I'll just talk about USB for a second anyway. The built-in USB port, which it has on the side here, doesn't operate in USB host mode. So what that means is it only acts like a hard disk when you plug it into your laptop through that, or network, or any or whatever other protocol you want to use. But it can only send stuff to your laptop. You can't plug a hard drive into that one and have it read off the hard drive. So that brings me to the extension port. Oh, no, it doesn't. That brings me to USB. That brings me to the extension port, which is on the bottom here. It's got like a little proprietary connector. And you can get... This is where the TV out plugs in. So if you buy just a TV out cable, you plug that in the bottom and it goes out to two TV things. But then you can also get this breakout box. Yeah, so this breakout box is a single board solution with all different... with like a... In the future, they're going to be releasing it as a docking cradle. So you'll get this nice-looking thing about this big, and this guy will plug right, will just sit right in it and talk to the peripherals. You've got four USB ports. It basically turns the GP2X into a very weak home computer kind of thing. You've got all the stuff you'd expect from that. So it's got four USB ports that you can use for whatever. Those do support host mode. Plug joysticks into them or hard disks or whatever you like. It's got RS-232 for doing dev stuff if you want. Audio plugs are a bit easy to use. Composite video out, that's the same as the TV out cable, but it just comes off the board. JTAG, which is useful for embedded developers who want to talk directly to the system. So yeah, some ideas for what you could do if this is like a MAME or media cabinet sitting in the docking station or USB Wi-Fi. I'm pretty sure that there are drivers in the current firmware that they've released for doing USB Wi-Fi, depending on which one you use. But so now I'm going to talk about Linux on the Nintendo DS. The Linux they're currently running, the kernel they're currently running is Microcontroller Linux, and pretty much everyone's using the 2.6 port. The unit doesn't have an MMU, so that means Microcontroller Linux was pretty much the only choice in that respect. There's no paging. So that limits the way they can use it, but yeah, so I'll just talk a bit about this 8-bit write thing. As I said before, all the storage and everything comes off the front here. These little cards that you can plug in actually have a bunch of ROM space, which is read-writable, so it's not really ROM, but you can only access it with 16-bit read and write. So when you try and... A lot of programs do 8-bit writes, right? So when you try and use that memory, you have a problem because whenever you do a write to an 8-bit location, it writes over the next 8-bit location next to it. So this guy, Amadeus, one of the lead developers, he found that there was a assembler instruction for the ARM processor, SWP, which you can use to... It does a read-then-write in one instruction. And so they hacked a version of GCC, and when you want to build DS Linux, you have to download this custom toolchain because they've replaced all the occurrences of str with SWP, so that instead of just doing a store, it swaps in and swaps out the same byte, does a read and then write. So it was interesting that ARM has that built in. I think ARM's a pretty wonderful platform, and you can do kind of neat stuff with a reduced instruction set. Go on. It's weird because I think it's RAM on board, but I'm not entirely sure about that. It's slower than accessing normal memory, and because they hacked the GCC, now all of the writes to even normal memory use the SWP, so everything's a bit slower, but you don't really notice it. I mean, yeah, it's not that much slower. So the other thing that happens is the text segments use this thing called execute in place, which means rather than them being read off the media into RAM, they run directly off the cart. So it means you don't waste extra memory. The memory is just used for stack and stuff like that. Yep. So Linux on the GP2X. This is quite a different beast. The version I have on my GP2X is the firmware from the company that was built on the in April 2006. It's a 2.4.25 kernel. It's just like a hacked kernel for this system. It's an ARM-built kernel basically. It's not microcontroller Linux, so it's not as restricted as that is. They do firmware updates periodically, but they're few and far between. So there's a movement underway to release kernels and make it easy to build your own kernel for the system. But I'll talk about why that hasn't happened that quickly in a minute. Lots of nice libraries come with that system, so SDL, libmad, libog, all the kind of media stuff, yeah? How many what? 320 by 240, yeah. If anyone else has any hardware questions which I didn't cover, just let me know. So it comes with this themeable interface. Did we get this working, or what happened? Oh, that's right, yeah. Never mind. I was going to hook up my USB, but it doesn't matter. So when you first turn it on, it's got this nice themeable interface. You can look for screenshots on the net, I guess. But that's unfortunately not GPL. It's a proprietary thing that they've put on top of it. They've been kind of weird about the GPL. I don't think when they first embarked on the project, they fully understood what it was all about, but that's all right. Now they've released the code, so it's all good. Linux runs on one of the CPUs, as I said before, so you can load up the other one with whatever you want, and it treats it like a peripheral. You can read from it and stuff. So some of the things people have done is someone's ported TinySDGL, which is Fabrice Bellard, who wrote QEMU. He's a while ago wrote this TinyGL, which is an implementation of OpenGL, really limited software-only implementation, which is really fast. It's a lot faster than MESA. I'm a big fan, actually, because he writes some pretty amazing software, that guy. There's a couple of other OpenGL implementations, OpenGL ES, Vincent, and GL2X, which is just a direct port. Or you could put audio code on there, or AI, whatever you like. So there are already a couple of apps which use it, use the second CPU for other stuff. I know there's one of the emulators does it. So running Linux on the GP2X part 2. There were some troubles getting the kernel source from Game Park Holdings. As I said, I'm not sure they completely understood that they had to give all the source that was linked together. There were some bits of the code which weren't forthcoming, like the I2C bus stuff. And so it took them only recently, and I think the first source release was December 1st, 2005, and that was incomplete. It didn't have everything with it. But then they released more source February 17th, 2006, and then December 2006 they released firmware 2.1, and they've been doing them a bit more regularly and with the source code every time. So you can build your own kernel, but at the moment it's pretty difficult, but there's guys working quite apart from Game Park Holdings to make that a bit easier. These guys, Open2X, that's what they're called. Go ahead. I don't think so. I think it's in there now. The last I read was that the current releases have everything. And that's why these Open2X guys have been able to do their project, which is the independent port. There are funny issues because the bootloader, if you screw up your code, and you can brick your DS really easily and make it unrecoverable without getting right in there. Mostly it's pretty cool. So they're looking at auto-starting SD images. So you would put Linux on an SD image, on an SD card, and then when you put it in, you can tell the GP2X, when I put an SD card in, auto-start it for me, which is pretty cool. I think they're also working on a system where once you've tested that and you like that system, you can copy it onto your NAND flash, burn it on. Yeah, so gp32x.com is the GP2X Hacker Central. So if you want to get into hacking the GP2X, go take a look at that. Yeah. So how am I going for time here? What, 10 minutes? Okay, cool. Yeah, targeting the DS, porting software to it and stuff like that, I'll talk about that now. The documentation is mostly at dslinux.org. There's a nice wiki and some good stuff there about porting apps and how to get build your own kernel and stuff like that. Yeah, you do have to download the modified toolchain if you want to build the kernel. So that's the one with the GCC that does the read before it does the write. And in order to port your apps or your libraries, basically you want to do a build of the kernel. So what you do is you go get the source, you get the toolchain. They've made it really easy to build the kernel because everything's just set up and works. And then once you've done that, you can actually, they've got this thing where you just type make XSH and it drops you into a shell with all the environment variables for the cross-compiler set up and everything for you. And then with some apps, you can just go stick them in the user directory, go in there and then just configure and make. And if you're really, really lucky, it'll work. But that and it has worked for quite a lot of apps. But then, of course, it's microcontroller Linux and it's missing a whole bunch of libraries and it's a stripped-down system, etc. So most of the time, if you're trying to port anything substantial, it's a bit of a mess, and it will take you a while to get all the dependencies compiled and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not saying don't do it. Please port more stuff to it. At the moment, yeah, it's mostly text mode stuff. They have done a port of TinyX, which is an X server, which is good for embedded systems because it's so small, but it obviously doesn't support the full feature set of X Windows. I think it runs Tetris. Go ahead. NanoX. Yeah. All right, thanks. Whoops. But there are a couple of other window systems as well. Micro Windows is one, and there's another one too. I can't remember what it's called, but there's a bunch of work going into making a GUI for it because at the moment it's quite limited. You can basically just use it as a terminal. You can SSH, you can check your mail, whatever you want, but you can't do graphical apps. Yeah, I'll just talk a bit about targeting the NDS directly. That's actually easier in a lot of cases because you get the full hardware. I'm a fan of doing things this way, putting apps on it. There's obviously advantages and disadvantages to both approaches. What I wish the kernel people who've been working on the kernel would do, in fact, I might probably just do it myself soon, is the frame buffer mode. You know how I said you've got a keyboard down the bottom on the touch screen, then you can switch it to mouse mode. That's really unintuitive to me. If you're on a handheld device, you want to use the touch screen as a touch screen, because if you do that, what happens is you have the mouse pointer on the top screen and you're kind of controlling it on the bottom screen. It doesn't really make any sense. You're just using it like a trackpad or something like that. But what they should do, or what I'm probably going to do soon, is make it so the bottom screen supports, you know, like runs like a frame buffer, so you can write directly to it and stuff like that, draw stuff on it, and it will support a touch screen mode. But if you've got a DS and you're running DS Linux, look out for that. So targeting the NDS directly, there's this great port someone's done of Stackless Python. Does anyone use Stackless Python here? Cool, yeah. It's a version of Python which they put extra features in it so that it can do stuff like basically fake threading. So you can put a while loop in one thread and it'll run both threads simultaneously, but it's not really doing threading. It's actually just stopping one and starting the other. But yeah, it makes develop. I haven't gone into it that much, but having a high-level language makes developing for a system much easier, obviously. Running stuff on the GP2X, you've got SDL, which is really awesome. Who here has used SDL? Lots of people, right? Yeah. Whoops. Wrong page. Okay, so yeah, you've got SDL and a bunch of other libraries, which I talked about before. And you've also got Pygame. Someone's done a port of Pygame, and Pygame's really awesome for game developers here. You can see Tim shaking his fist in the air. Woo! It just makes things much easier. You can write a game in like 1/10 the time you can write it using C++. Of course, it's going to be slower for the most part. But and that is an issue on the GP2X because it's limited hardware. You have to really be careful about your optimization. You have to do as much as you can in C to get it going really fast. But it's great for glue logic. And those are my smiley faces because I like it so much. Yeah, there's people suggest you statically link libraries because someone's shaking their head. I knew this was going to happen. Yeah, because basically, because all the libraries are in NAND flash that it uses by default, if you want to statically link your own libraries into your binary. But I was thinking about it today, and you can just copy your dynamically linked libraries into the executable directory, which is pretty nasty, but that's what you have to do on console systems because the releases are... Developing for console is a bit different from developing for PC, where you can just app get upgrade or whatever, and all your libraries come in nicely. On a console, generally things are released like more like a Windows style, you know, solid releases done every now and then. So yeah, that's static libraries. So the community around DS Linux support from Nintendo is basically zilch. Nintendo have never written to anyone in the thing. They've never communicated with anyone from Nintendo, as far as I know. Which is fine, that's cool. They just seem to turn a blind eye mostly. Not like Sony with the PSP, every time there's a hack or something, they seem to purposely change it so they can't do homebrew software on it. I'm not quite sure what the business sense is there, but I guess they've got people in management working on that. Yeah, so this issue of forums versus mailing lists, who here loves forums? Oh. There are people, okay. I won't diss them too much then. Yeah, I like mailing lists a lot better than forums, but for some reason, all game-related stuff, people tend to use forums, and I just find them a bit clunky. Like, can't really get into them. But, yeah, I guess it's a push versus pull thing. Forums, you have to pull from mailing lists to push information to you. So the speed and direction of development. Currently, the development's going pretty quickly. They've got a bunch of apps ported over, and you can use it like a terminal, like I said, but there are people working on Windows-like system, not Windows as in Microsoft Windows, you know, windowing systems and stuff like that to make it a bit easier. Yeah, so it's going really well. I'm excited about the project. So the GP2X community is a bit different. There is this group. Did I put it on here? GP2X. I think it's gp32x.com, which is a group of developers, and they... That's where most of the homebrew development's going on. Game Park Holdings themselves, they don't seem to get that involved with the homebrew scene. They've just kind of gone, here's our cool system, go do whatever you want with it. But obviously they're actively promoting it. They've done competitions and stuff like that because it's in their best interest for lots of people to hack for it. And it's interesting to see that business model. Like they're trying to find a niche in a market that's dominated by massive players. And the way they're doing that is by saying... Community, this is your turn. You can do what you want. We're much friendlier. It is quite difficult to get the SDK working. The official SDK, I couldn't get it working according to the instructions on the website. But then there's a couple of homebrew SDKs who've done the cross compilation for you, so you don't have to do it yourself. And at least one of them works, and then you can write code to your heart's content. It also doesn't have any mailing lists that I can find. The Open2x project does have a mailing list, but there's like 6 posts on it in 3 months or something. So yeah, I guess the final thing that it comes down to is which one goes in my pocket. The answer to that is it really depends. The DS has 802.1, so if you want to do stuff like remote administration from out somewhere, you know, you can fit that in your pocket really easily, and that's kind of cool, being able to SSH back home when you're out in the middle of nowhere and not have to have your laptop on you. The GP2X is just really, really good for tasks like emulation and watching movies and stuff like that, basically illegal things. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing as well. It's like so many people are doing this stuff. 1/5 of all Australians, the official figure is, copy MP3s for each other, and it's like, why is something illegal that a lot of people are doing, like 1/5 of the population, but... Anyway, I'll just do a quick price comparison. I can only do it in Australian dollars, but the GP2X cost me $400. That included the TV out and the power, and the Nintendo DS, I think it's around $200 or less now, probably. Okay. Is that for the original DS or the DS Lite? Okay, cool. The what, sorry? Oh, SD card converter. I think the converter is $60, and then a mini SD card, I can't remember, but a little bit extra. So you can have, so that system's definitely cheaper all up, but then it can't do TV out, and it's harder to get it to do media stuff. But it's a great little box to hack for. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this because, you know, we've got stuff that we can write code for and just take it on the road with us now. And it's not $700 like a PDA, so. Okay, let's go ahead with questions. No, you can't. Let me try and remember why that is. I think because it doesn't support writing. Maybe if... No, there is a... You can buy a card, which you can plug a mini SD card into that one, but... Oh, the reason... you can do it. Okay, I think you can do it, but you can't use the RAM extension. So, because the whole thing is these GBA cards support writing to the RAM, but these ones don't. I've got to look that one up.
Are there any small distributions for them contained in, say, emulators and things too?
Not for this. Not for the DS. The DS is basically everything's compiled into the... When you compile the kernel, you compile all the apps at the same time. So it's typical kind of microcontroller Linux setup. They treat it more like an embedded system. For this one, there is heaps of software which you can just download and run on it because everything's dynamically linked and uses the same libraries. So every time they do a firmware release, it doesn't really break anything. Yep, up the back.
What about financial viability of GT2X? There are recently some rather nasty rumors about them being pretty much cash-strapped and that it will stop shipping pretty soon.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that. I know there's a statistic on some website which says they sold, I think it was 10,000, and they're expecting, or maybe it was 20,000, they're expecting to sell 50,000 by December, but it's past December now, so maybe they didn't meet their goal and it's too late. Yeah, Tim?
Is anybody using Open Embedded to target these systems?
Not that I've heard about. I only know of the main project for Nintendo DS. But Open Embedded probably wouldn't be that appropriate for the GP2X, I don't know. That's probably something to look at. Oh, right, okay.
That's their target anyway.
So this guy said the Open2X people have one big makefile which builds everything. That's similar to the NDS way of doing things. Yeah. All right. Lots of people leaving, so I guess that's it.
Okay. Here's some glasses for you.
Cool, thanks.
Speaker's gift. So yeah, thanks again to Chris. It's afternoon tea time, and talks start again at 4:00.